kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. How are you?
I've been cleaning scum out of the pool all day, so I'm fine. I'm doing great.
You've been cleaning scum out of the pool.
Algae scum.
Yeah. Tis the season.
I put that algae killer shit in there, and I was like, I waited for like an hour, came in, took a nap. I was like, fuck yeah, nap. And I took a nap, and then I went back outside, and it was like, bleh, algae all over the top. I was like, that's nasty.
Jeez. You want to know what else is nasty?
What's nasty?
How amazingly generous our friend Victor X is. Not only did he just sub in chat, which, by the way, Purnell, take it away. If it plays.
Fucking yeah!
There we go. Not only did he sub, but we were just chatting a little bit, and he mentioned that he's downloading The Last of Us 2, and I mentioned I was going to dip into my PC fund to pick up The Last of Us 2, and Victor just donated $70 so I could get The Last of Us 2.
What a good bean.
Holy shit, Victor. Pat, you are amazing. You are absolutely amazing. Thank you so much. I am incredibly excited to check out The Last of Us 2. And I will report on it next week on the show. I will give my feedback. I have to play it now. There's no excuse to not play it. Victor, yep. You are amazing. Thank you so much. Your generosity is incredible. As you could tell, Chris is here. Chris Huber, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm sure we'll get into some reasons later as to why I'm feeling particularly like good, but apprehensive, but good.
Is it the marijuana's? It's the marijuana's.
No. Oh. No.
I guess you might be able to attribute it to being as close of a drug for me as it can be.
Fancy.
Well, before we get into the news, Chris, how are you doing? It's been a while since you've been here. Been a few months. How's things going? How's the lockdown treating you?
Well, you know, at first it was not good. I've been mostly staring at a wall for like 3.5 months.
I think we all have. I did a
couple streams here and there, but like, you know, physically I didn't want to like go overboard. And I'll be like, I'll keep it 100 with you guys. Like, so what I was doing is I was doing drum requests and just kind of like playing what like other people wanted, and they would just come in and just, you know, request whatever they wanted. And a lot of the nights that I was doing it, like people would come in and like request a handful of songs that I was just like, okay, yeah, whatever. You know, it's only one song. I'll get through it and just keep going. Right. When there's a limited amount of people that are in, you're basically just playing the same like songs over and over again for like that same person. And I had a couple streams where like somebody was coming in and just like requesting a shit ton of dubstep, and it just got like I want to try and be supportive. I mean, like, I don't want to like bash on anybody's like, you know, things that they like.
Drop it, you know,
into dubstep, he or she, or is it really into dubstep, you know, good on them. But I just don't want to play that stuff. And like, it just started to like kind of like wear on me that like I kind of wanted to stream for the whole reason of like I want to do what I want to do. And I just haven't figured out like a good way of like playing and still having fun with it, but still making
Drop
it like
it
interactive for people, because I don't want to just like go out there and be like, all right, just deal with what I'm doing and or get the fuck out, because I just won't be playing to anybody.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's definitely a fundamental shift for people that have been like in entertainment and stuff like that, because I think it's just expected for people to make themselves available and try and do something from home, and it's not the same experience, and it's very difficult to try and still translate something heartfelt when you're essentially just trying to like figure stuff out on the fly the entire time, you know.
No.
You know, it's hard to stay focused on like, you know, trying to be entertaining, I guess.
It is very hard to stay focused when Cole is dropping bits in chat.
I mean, I see that.
I'm George, just like, take it away.
I'm seeing the frame rate
of like all of the hearts that are being dropped, and I feel for your computer.
Dude, you should have seen last time. Cole, what did you do? You dropped like 300 bits in all in ones?
So. Yeah.
So it probably took like 20 minutes to get through.
Yeah. But there's some good news. I might be getting a new computer soon. I mentioned a little bit before my computer fund. I've been talking on the show about this website called Mercari that I've been addicted to, and I might be really close to a PC soon. So, Chris, I might need you to come down and build me a PC soon.
Sure. Yeah. Do it. I mean, it's... So I just put that one together for my brother. It was kind of a pain in the ass just because like it was right at the, like we started ordering the first round of his parts and stuff like a week before the lockdowns. Like it was the worst timing ever. So we order the stuff. It got backed up. Eventually come to find out once I start to put everything together, they were missing the graphics card, like when they did the initial shipment, which was crucial because the CPU that I ordered doesn't have a built-in like graphics like processor on it, so you need to run a graphics card with it. So we're waiting for the graphics card. Finally comes in. Turns out the motherboard was dead on arrival. So then I had to send that out and RMA that, find another one, and this was already now a couple weeks into the shutdown, and everybody was fucking putting together computers, so the availability was parts. For parts was obnoxiously small. So there was only like three motherboards that I could choose from to try and get a replacement for them. It was fucking horrendous. We finally got everything together. We got everything set up for him. He's playing games and keeping himself occupied now. The whole reason why I wanted to put it together for him was so that he could record some stuff. We ordered an interface, audio interface for him. Back ordered, still hasn't shipped yet.
Jeez.
Like, fuck.
I got incredibly lucky because I had my PC built right at the beginning, like the end of February, beginning of March. And there were some parts that were going to be difficult to get, but the guy that I had build it for me, he's sponsored by Newegg and everything, and they were like, oh yeah, we'll get you that. So some shit was kind of special sent for me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have to sweat it out so bad. Yes, but I was able to get mine right. I think I got it like the 10th of March or something like that was when it showed up. And I was, whew.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I felt so bad because, like, this was the first time, like, I finally had convinced my brother. He's been, his computer before this was still running XP.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So like
I'm on Windows 10.
Exactly. So like you want to try and like feel bad about the way that your computer is set up. Like he straight up couldn't do anything on that thing, right? I couldn't even set it up so that he could just do basic web browsing on it. Like I couldn't get the drivers right for like the version of XP that he had. So like he straight up just stopped using computers for like years. And he was the one that originally like taught me how to like work on them and everything. So it was really kind of strange to like try and get him reacclimated into using a computer again. He's still trying to like, you know, struggle along, but like I finally convinced him to like, hey man, you need to like build something newer. I think this is the time. And then it ultimately took like 2.5 fucking months for him to have it. And I was just like, I felt like shit. Like, but I mean, it's together. It's good. It's working for him now, but it was just like for that 2.5 months, I was just like, man, I feel like such an asshole because like he spent all this money to get the stuff. Now, granted, he didn't like I put together a build that was about like 700 ish for him. And he's good. Like he's set for a while now. So, I mean, like it's not to me, that's not like a small chunk of change. So I've just felt guilty that he was just like he just spent basically like all this money and he couldn't do anything with it. So.
It is stressful when you send, like, I literally, when I paid for my computer, I sent the money, I got the PayPal email that it went through, and then I immediately went and threw up. I was so stressed out and anxious over it, and I didn't sleep for, like, 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's just, like, it's way more stressful than it really should be.
But and you're like, what happens if I just plunk down $400 for a graphics card and it's dead? Like you said, the motherboard was dead on arrival.
The motherboard. Like, it took me forever because I actually had to take it. I had to take it to another repair shop that was local just because I found out that even with the motherboard that we had, even though it was compatible with the CPU that I bought, like the BIOS of the motherboard had to be updated for it to recognize the chip. The only way to actually get the BIOS on there is to put a compatible chip that was on the BIOS version that it was in it so that you could update it.
Was I didn't it a have B450?
No. I think it was the hell was it? It was the one right before that basically. But it was for the Ryzen 5 second gen, but it was at it was the tail end of the supported list of motherboards. Right. So I take it down there and I was just like, hey, could you, I already have the BIOS updates on a flash drive. Like here they are. All the parts are in here. Can you just put in a different CPU to update the BIOS and then go from there? Right. And they were the ones that had to tell me that the CPU was dead because they tried, or the motherboard was dead because they tried three different CPUs in it. I was just like, shit. Okay. Whatever. So it was definitely like a hassle, and it was the first time that I had done an AMD build since like college. So I know that it would have been like I could easily get like Intel stuff, drop it in, and be good to go. Yeah. But for the price, I was able to get him, you know, a little bit more performance per dollar.
AMD is a steal right now.
They're doing some really good stuff. I mean, like personally, I mean, I've been using an AMD graphics card for a handful of years now and have no complaints.
I have a AMD Ryzen 5 3600X in mine.
I'm still on like older, like R9 390.
I love that you guys are spitting out these numbers and words and I have no fucking clue. Like, I'm sitting here quietly waiting for something to actually be recognizable so I could contribute to the conversation, and I can't.
No That's Time for Games says he has a 3950X, and I'm so jelly. the 3600X was so much more than what I thought I was going to be able to do, because I needed to put at least 32 gig of RAM in my PC.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I was fully prepared to, like, go for, like, a 1600 AF or a 2600. And if it weren't for Roby building my PC for me, I would not have had like 90% of the shit in it that I got.
I ended up getting a 2600 for my brother.
Yeah. Because I was like, there was a deal on Newegg. It was a 2600 and 32 gigabyte of RAM. And I forget what the price of it was, but it was, I don't know, it was like $40 cheaper or whatever if you bought it like that. And I was like, oh, I'm going to get that. And he was like, if you get a better CPU, I will throw in the RAM. And I was like, here's the deal. You just build it for me and I send you the money.
Yeah. You figure it out. Yeah.
And then he was like, okay, I'll build it on Joe. And there was a big hullabaloo about it. And I had my PC built and it's fantastic. And it is far better than anything I could have built for my $1,200 budget. But I was streaming Call of Duty the other day. Streaming Call of Duty. So I had Streamlabs open, Call of Duty open. I was getting 130 to 160 frames per second, you know, and I was using like 16% of my CPU. It was just like, this? No, this fine. We don't care. Whatever. Yeah. Keep doing. Do you want to open Spotify while we're at it? Because we got some space. It just blows through whatever I put it through, and I'm like, I love you.
I'm just glad that like storage prices have been finally like leveling out and getting better.
I was looking to I want to upgrade. David's got my old PC, which is an i5 2600.
Okay, so,
it's a thing.
Okay.
And it's still like DDR3 RAM.
Yeah, sounds about right. Yeah.
And so it's a thing, but he's got my old PC, so I was like, I'd really like to upgrade for him. And I completely lost where I started off at with that conversation. I gotta have my medicine.
Don't look at me. You guys are doing this conversation on your own.
I just completely lost where it started me.
We're good.
Why did I bring up the i5?
We could just start. We could. I know, Joe, you're just kind of like idling.
Well, yeah, waiting, it's fine. So like, go ahead. Yeah. Thanks.
There's stuff to talk about. We don't have to
There is stuff to talk about.
So basically, I built a computer for my brother, been learning a bunch of music, and apparently I'm going to have to start playing out soon because people want to start like booking now, even though they're probably going to like try and book us. And then like in like a couple weeks, we'll go back to yellow and then I'll have to sit and stare at the wall more.
Yeah.
So.
Yay.
Fun.
I haven't stopped staring at the wall.
Hooray, pandemic. Yay. Yeah.
And I still have half of a birthday cake in my freezer that I'm slowly trying to get through.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, so we were supposed to play a show. My birthday was on Friday.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Happy late birthday.
Thank you. We were supposed to do a show. So originally I had actually ordered a specialty cake from like a local vegan restaurant from the area. Because I just assumed, like, okay, there's going to be a bunch of people at the show. I won't have to eat this cake by myself. So, yeah, the show was canceled. I still got the cake. It's really good. Like, it's delicious. Because it's like I've been on, like, the strawberry kick for some reason, like, most of quarantine. So, like, actually, when she had asked me, like, what type to make, I was just like, make it so, like, strawberry everything. So she ended up doing like strawberry cake with like a strawberry like ice cream layer, and then like white icing on the outside. It is probably the most effeminate cake I've ever had, but it's
hey, as long as it tastes good, that's all that matters.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep, and it's been keeping in the freezer just fine. So I've just been slowly making my way through it, and then feeling that much worse about myself because I'm just eating a whole fucking it's a big cake like two tiers plus the ice cream in the middle, and it's like probably the width of a keyboard.
God damn. Like, Mel, enjoy your cake.
I probably will be for the next
month. Oh man, we should probably get to news though. There has been a lot of news this week. The EA Play event happened today. Cole, did you watch this at all?
So can I be perfectly honest?
Sure.
I watched it, but I waited till after it aired, and I fast-forwarded past all the sports shit.
Makes sense.
You don't have to feel guilty about that, honestly.
I don't do sports ball.
I didn't even watch the event. I just read the notes.
Oh, well, yeah. Then I feel already.
I watched the event. I mean, there was really only a couple notable things, so...
Yeah, let's go through a couple of the highlights. They announced Apex Legends is hitting the Switch this fall, and a handful of other EA titles are going to be hitting the Switch as well, along with Burnout Paradise, which is launching on Friday. So
there was something else that they mentioned about Apex that I thought was interesting.
Yeah, it's getting full crossplay support.
I was about to time. Ask if they had said that by any chance, because I saw Apex, I was like, okay, Apex shit. And then I skipped and I was like, oh, I probably should have watched that.
Well, so the other thing is that they're putting it on Steam. So you don't have to necessarily go through their like weird EA Play
That's
thing.
Fantastic. And that we'll talk more about that in a second because I'm excited for things.
Yeah. Ahead, Apex Legends hit the Steam as well as a handful of other games. A Way Out, Dead Space 3, Need for Speed Most Wanted, Titanfall 2, and The Sims 4, so all of those are on Steam now.
I definitely don't need The Sims on another platform.
Yeah.
I need The Sims on another platform. And can't promise I'm not going to buy it.
So can we actually touch on something when it comes to The Sims on Steam for a second here?
Sure.
Well, two things, actually. One, don't you think, like, the modding community is going to have a fucking field day with it, which is going to be that much better for like the community for the game? And two, what about the marketplace? Like, do you think that at some point for all their DLC stuff, do you think that they would just make them items that you could then sell and trade, like the trading cards and like skins for CS and stuff like that?
Oh.
Because if they were to do that and convert some of the DLC over to that type of a monetization thing, you think that they made money off of Sims before? Like, holy shit. Like, it would just, like, they would literally be swimming in money Like, not to mention, like, you know that people would have a field day with, like, the economy that would grow of just buying and reselling fucking Steam items, or, like, Sims items, you know? I think it's really interesting. I think it's a, I think it's an angle that they probably should have tapped into ages ago. And if they do it that way, yeah, they'll just be unstoppable.
That just seems like a really weird can of worms to open. I don't know. I mean, it seems like there could be that could go down like a rabbit hole of real money transactions that just get out of control, like the Diablo auction house, how crazy that got.
To be fair, I mean, like, it's not like it doesn't exist in other games. I mean, true. You could still you could do it. You could do it in CS. You could do it in a lot of Valve stuff. But there's a lot of other games that utilize that kind of stuff. Like, even, like, what is it? Like, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. Like, I have all of my drops. Like, I could just put them on the marketplace and sell them, even if it's only for a couple cents. That's still money. So, like, if there's ways that you can, like, use those items and like, buy and resell or trade or whatever, I think it would be really, really interesting. And I definitely think that I could see a stipulation like that being one of the reasons why they finally decided to go over to the platform.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because it's, like, one of the only things that makes Steam Steam, right? Like,
it's true, yeah.
I don't know.
One of the things that stood out to me for the Sims part, to step away from it being on Steam for a second, there was a comment, the video centered very much about playing as you wanted to play. And so there were, you know, African Americans, and there was a trans man in the video. And then there was also a lady who said that she could play as disabled, and that her disability didn't matter in the game. The Sims has never had disabilities in the game.
Yeah, that's true.
People have been asking for it for a long time, but there are no disabilities unless you mod the game to include wheelchairs and things like that. And then you're still stuck within the structure of the game.
Right. Interesting. Mm. So when are they implementing that? Is that in with one of the newer expansions or something?
That's the thing. Like, they didn't come right out and say, "Oh yeah, we're adding disabilities to the game, and we're gonna have this on this date, or it's gonna be an update, or it's gonna be a free."
It was just kind of there.
It was just like snuck into it all. And as soon as she mentioned it, my ears perked up because I'm like, I've never had disabilities in The Sims before. And, you know, but the whole point of the comment was, or the little part of the trailer was, play your way and be whoever you want to be. And this is obviously a point that is missing and a source of contention for some players, to be fair. You know, when so much effort is put on representation in a game, and this one very large community is not represented, it's interesting to see that they didn't just come right out and say it. They just, like, snuck it in to see who sees it. You know, and you're like, you could have gave us a little something else to, you know, I don't know. People have been asking for this for four fucking games.
Maybe they don't want to come across as pandering.
I can see that.
That whole video would have come across as pandering, to be fair.
I mean, it already kind of did. Yeah, I was just going to say, like, they had, like, the interracial couple at the wedding, and, like...
Yeah, I appreciated what they were trying to do, but it's, you know... They were very clearly playing a market.
No.
But, you know, I would like to have seen a definitive, hey, yeah, we're going to add this, here's what it's going to be. Maybe they haven't finished fleshing it out yet, but at that point, they should have just not said anything.
Well, I mean, like, what's the release cycle for their expansions like? Like, are they due to, like, do a new expansion soon, or?
They just had a new expansion, didn't they?
Last expansion was in December, and then there was a stuff pack recently. Those aren't technically expansions.
Yeah, stuff pack.
I thought there was an actual expansion, like, last week or the week before.
I don't think
like
so.
Like a $40 expansion pack.
I'm pretty sure the Tiny Living or the Eco Living
is a $40 thing. Is probably the stuff pack.
yeah. Because expansions are usually $50.
Yeah.
And then there's like an in between, like, gameplay pack or whatever they call it, and that's usually around $30, and then the stuff packs are $20. So
who knows? Yeah, I mean, I can't say that I've like actively looked at the DLC for The Sims.
Eco
while,
so. Lifestyle Expansion Pack released June 5th.
So it was an expansion. So ooh. I would think that if they're going to add something, usually something that changes the game in a way that involves the characters you can create specifically beyond like adding the supernatural characters. That's usually something they do in a title update. Like when they added toddlers fucking
like a
finally.
Patch.
Yeah, it was a title update and not, you know, I mean, they ended up adding the parenthood expansion as well, but it was flat out. Here's your toddlers. Sorry, we took so long. Please don't be mad. You know, so I'm fully expecting if they do push disabled characters, it's going to be, here's your disabilities. Sorry, took so long. Please don't be mad.
I don't know, but speaking of things that they didn't reveal any kind of date or information about, Chris, the big news from the EA Play event, Skate 4 is happening.
Yeah, that's about all you could say about it.
That is literally everything they said about Skate 4.
Yep, they're just like, hey, we're gonna work on it.
It's in development. It's happening.
It almost seems like... Like, you want to talk about pandering? dude, holy shit. Like, that, there was no substance to them doing that at all. Like, none. like, they didn't have a logo. They didn't have, like, a, we've been working with X, Y, and Z to make this happen. It was just, hey, we're going to do it. Like, and that's it. Like, so, for them to just say, like, hey, we're going to put some effort into it and not have anything to show for it and not have any kind of updates as far as like what's the thing that they feel like is necessary for them to hit. Like they didn't discuss any type of like philosophies as to what they want to have the game be. They're just like, hey, we're going to make one and that's it. Like, I don't know. I told Joe, I don't want to get too overhyped and then be severely fucking disappointed because, like, I don't see it for the next 6 years. And I hate to say it, but I wouldn't be surprised if we have almost like a Duke Nukem-esque type of thing where it's just like, listen, you had your chance. You waited too fucking long to make this game, and this is not what we wanted. It's not up to the par and the standards that we would want it to be. You shouldn't have made it. And then people just riot and get pissed off that they even made a Skate 4 in the first place. Like, I don't know. There has to be more than just a, hey, we got the guy that was originally like the, commentator for the whole game or the narrator for the whole game. And one of the other guys that was originally working on it. There's other games that people that developed for Black Box are working on that we can talk about later, Joe. But even that stuff, like, I don't know, Skate 1, 2, and 3, to me, is one of my favorite, like, trilogies of all time in all of gaming. Now, I'm biased because I like skateboarding games, but for what they did, for the whole, like, skating community and how unique they were to other games, that's what made it interesting, you know? I want to be excited. I want to find out more. I'm just curious as to how long is it going to take for them to actually have some substance to back what they're saying that they're doing. Because to me, it just seemed like they're just like, hey, you guys willed this into existence because you're persistent in us and telling us that we don't know how to fucking do our jobs. Like, that, I don't know. Like,
you've been waiting this long. You might as well be optimistic about it. If you just think doom and gloom.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's good. I hope they prove me wrong. I hope it's the type of game that can have the same longevity as Skate 3 does, because I still play Skate 3, and that's been out for how many fucking years now?
Yeah. Like, well, it got new life on the Xbox One because of being an enhanced 4K title.
Yes. Not only that, but also just like you know, redoing some of the community servers and stuff like that, so you could download like maps and stuff again. There's some other functionality to it that isn't there that I wish was still there, but like, that's what's crazy about that game. Like, they put so much shit into that game. Like, it was really flushed out. Like, there wasn't too many things in that title that I was like, man, I wish I had this, or man, I wish there was this. My only grievance for the years that I've been playing Skate 3 is that when you go into the custom parks, the frame rate drops. That's it. Like, that's literally it. I had no other complaints with the game. And that's obviously something that would be helped with the hardware that's available to people now, because originally Skate 3 was on the 360.
Like, it's been 10 years since the last Skate, right?
Uh-huh. Okay. It's got to be something like that, at least. I mean, right. I could be wrong. Joe, you might know. I thought it might maybe like 2011.
I don't know the year of Skate 3. If anyone knows the year of Skate 3, it would be you.
I don't keep track of stats like that. Like,
Skate 3 released May 11th, 2010.
There you go.
Okay, so it was 2010.
So it was just
dead on the head. Look at me.
Yeah. See, and honestly, like, I agree with Doc. Doc said was like, it's one of these things where they announced Skate 4, and it's so, like, they're so far away from it now, by the time they actually go to release it, the people that are going to be looking at the game aren't even going to remember the franchise.
Yeah.
Like, that's literally, that's 10 years is enough. Like, you're going to be marketing to that group of people in the next 4 or 5 years. So if it doesn't come out in the next 4 or 5 years, nobody's going to give a shit about it. Other than the people that are already like hardcore, probably still playing Skate 3, and hopefully, depending on how the development of the other skate simulators that are coming out, and not notice how I say simulators and not games, because I think there's a fundamental difference between them. Skate 3 is a game. Maybe if these other simulators that are coming out have enough depth that it could hold people over, that they don't feel like they need the game, it might crush them, you know, it might kill them.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll find out. There's plenty of time to hear more. But speaking of skateboarding, Chris, have you heard of Skatebird?
I have. Yes. Yes, I have.
The Idea Xbox program had a summer spotlight showcase during the Guerrilla Collective that featured a handful of Idea Xbox titles that are going to be coming out over the next couple of months. And before we get to those, quick shout out to Root Beer's My Jam, who just gifted a sub to Dark Mika. So Purnell, take it away.
Fucking yeah.
That's right.
Fucking yeah.
That's right.
Fucking yeah.
Goddamn right, Purnell.
Oh, goodness.
But, yeah, they started off the showcase showing off Skatebird, which is a bird on a fucking skateboard. It is literally what it sounds like it is. And it looks adorable.
It does look cute. I'll give it that.
Do you think you're going to play it, Chris?
That'd be a hard no. and I only say that because I enjoy skateboarding too much that, like, once you've played games that capture what, like, being on a skateboard is like, it is hard to go away from games that don't do that. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I am very excited for the Tony Hawk remake. I'm more excited about how they're going to develop Session and Skater XL than I am in playing Tony Hawk again, because ever since, and I've said it plenty of times when I talk about Skate before, once you play that series and if you get the game and you really understand it and learn to love it, you'll never want to play a Tony Hawk game ever again. Like, I'm not as excited about the remake of Tony Hawk as I thought I would be. Genuinely. Like, I thought I was going to be, like, losing my fucking mind as soon as the announcement happened. I was kind of like, eh, whatever.
I kind of figured you would be the guy getting the collector's edition that comes with the skateboard deck.
It was close. And I only say that just because, like, you know, the deck would be cool to have as, like, a, you know, like swaggy art PC kind of thing that you could put on a wall or something, you know?
No.
Because I already have my boards that I ride. Like, they're already set up, so I wouldn't use it and actually, like, ride it, so.
I don't know, but if Skatebird comes out and if we get it for review, I'm putting you on that job. They also showed off a game called Spellbreak from Proletariat Games, which is an arena fighting game with spells and flying. I don't remember too much about this one. It's been a few days since I watched this showcase, so a lot of the games are just like in one ear out the other.
I didn't watch the showcase thing, so.
Yeah, I missed it.
Oh, well, then I'll just go through the other games that were shown off. They showed off The Falconeer from Wired Productions, which is a dogfighting air combat game on a giant falcon, which looks really good.
Sounds rad.
They showed off The Forgotten City from Dear Villagers, which is a first-person adventure with time twisting, which looked pretty interesting. A game called Trash Sailors from Tiny Build, which is a co-op game about sailing on a raft with local and online multiplayer. I got some Overcooked vibes from this one.
I'd be down for this just from what you said. Like when I played Ark all the time, Studa's number one thing was always building the raft. So like I could see me and him getting totally trapped in a game where you're building a raft and floating around. It just, yeah, that's shit we get lost on.
Yeah, this one looks pretty cool.
Sea of Thieves.
Yeah, I've been trying to make him go fishing with me and we haven't had time. And then he signs in today. He's like, I'm ready to go fishing and Sea of Thieves. I'm like, I fucking hate you. I got to record Thursday, dumbass.
Yeah, I've been jamming Sea of Thieves recently as well.
I want to play it on my computer.
It's so good.
Vertically Impaired says it's raft meets Don't Starve in my eyes.
I will say that playing Sea of Thieves on PC, I will sometimes play with a controller. So it's not necessarily.
I play everything with the controllers, though, because I can't, my fingers, I can't hold up on the mouse and keyboard. I get fatigued out. Like, I can handle playing like my card games. Yeah. Pirate Outlaws, Deck of Ashes, Monster Train.
Do you,
I can do that.
You don't mess around on Magic Arena at all, do you?
I don't. I have such a weird quirk about the kind of card games I like.
Oh, okay. I was just curious because I've been like, that's pretty much the game that I've been playing the most recently. I mean, I got myself up to platinum rank in Constructed. I've been wanting to like, honestly, like I've been wanting to stream that more than playing drums, but like nobody gives a shit when I play Magic. So.
Yeah, the like, couple times I've streamed playing Pirate Outlaws, literally nobody shows up, and yeah. I'm like, don't care, having fun.
Right? Don't get me wrong. You know, the whole point of like streaming shouldn't be like, all right, you know, there's people here, but at the same time, when you're streaming to nobody, that's not fun. So
I mean, it doesn't help that it's usually 3 a.m. when I'm like Pirate Outlaws before I go to bed.
Well, yeah, but you're. That you can't necessarily take into consideration because I was getting like certain times when I would stream where I knew none of my friends would be on.
Yeah.
I would just like, you know, I'd get like a like some people from like Germany or like something like that.
Lightspeed's like, calling me out. He does show up and I am very grateful for Lightspeed because he is always there.
I would show up more if you told me when you were streaming.
I don't want to hassle people about it. I don't want to be like, hey, come watch me. So I just like, I go live.
I'm the same way. I was just like, you know what? It's if I feel like streaming, I'm going to stream. But, you know, I've been modifying my setup so many different times that it's just like, it's very difficult for me to like, if I feel like that I want to stream and I don't have half the stuff set up that I need to stream, I'm just like, shit, I don't want to set the stuff up and like, and then have to change it back for like the next day. And just yeah. I'd like to try and get it ideally like set up and streamlined so that it's always like, consistent, but what I did figure out, Joe, is that I got my capture card to work, so I can do stuff from the Xbox, so I could play Skate and stream Skate.
There you go.
I might do that as well. So I don't know. We'll see.
Well, just let me know when you stream, so I can watch.
Mm-hmm.
You too, Cole. Let me know when you fucking stream.
Okay. At 3 a.m. I'll be playing Pirate Outlaws, and I'll send you a Skype message.
Perfect.
Also during the summer spotlight, they showed off a game called Call of the Sea from our friends at Raw Fury, which is a first person adventure exploring an island and yourself.
This sounds up my alley.
No, the next one is up your alley, Cole. Oh, it's called Dead Static Drive by Team Fan Club. They call it Grand Theft Cthulhu.
Grand Theft Cthulhu.
Yes, it is a horror adventure game. So, Cole, that is directly up your alley. And then the final game they showed off was a game called Welcome to Elk from Triple Topping Games, which is mini games and stories based on real people. This one looked pretty interesting. I am eager to hear more about it. I thought all the games looked pretty good. It's cool to see what indies are coming out. I love indies have been so much more entertaining to me than AAA titles anymore.
I've been playing a bunch of that Gunfire Reborn or whatever, I think. Is that the name of it? Let me look at it. Gunfire Reborn. It's like a first person shooter, roguelike kind of thing.
Hold up. I need to Google this.
Yeah, you got someone's attention.
Yeah, it's fun.
He said two of my favorite genres. I loaded up the Steam store the other day, and immediately it was like, we think you might like these genres. And it was card battling, roguelike, first-person shooter, simulator. And I was like, fuck, they learn fast.
They sure do. They absolutely do. But it's fun. Yeah, I mean, you play as a cat or a dog.
Huh.
It's like...
This is adorable.
It honestly, like, the reviews on it are really good. I've already dumped... Let me look at the library here. I already have 20 hours in it.
Damn.
I'm over 120 in Pirate Outlaws.
Oh, Jesus. You and Pirate Outlaws. I gotta stop getting you games to review like that.
Nope. And you know what's funny is that you've given me some other ones and none of them have hit the way that Pirate Outlaws did. Like, I like them and I've played them and I've enjoyed them, but Pirate Outlaws just, like, it calls my name. It says, you know you want to try just one more time. And then 7 hours later, I'm like, son of a bitch, I didn't play my review shit. Now Joe's going to fuss at me because I need to ask for extra time.
God damn it, Cole. What are we bumping this week?
That's funny because I did that yesterday. And he knows it.
Oh, God. Some other news, some Game Pass news. A couple of games were added just this week. We got Thronebreaker from The Witcher, that card game.
That's a good one.
I haven't played it yet. I bought it on a sale, and I still haven't played it, which I'm sure shocks a lot of our listeners that I bought a game and haven't played it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, shocking.
Never expected you to do that.
No, it's pretty unique. Something that hasn't happened ever. Yeah.
Nice.
We also got the Bard's Tale ARPG remastered and resnarkled, which I am thrilled this game finally hit Xbox. We got it on PS4 a couple of years ago, and now it's finally on Xbox and Switch, and it apparently has Xbox Live integration on the Switch.
Ooh, that's interesting. Yeah. Hmm. That's very interesting.
So is it Pop Achievements?
I think so. I didn't buy it on the Switch yet. I'm tempted to fire it up and see if I get achievements on it. But I don't know. I don't have to worry about getting it on Xbox because it's on Game Pass.
I need to see more Switch games have Xbox Live. I need that to be a marriage that happens so that I can actually make myself play the Switch more.
I haven't been playing mine too much. I played it for Tetris the other day.
Oh.
Yeah, I hopped into, what is that, the Tetris?
Tetris 99.
100? Yeah, thing, yeah, yeah.
I had to delete Tetris so the girls had room for the Pokemon update.
Oh, jeez, get an SD card.
Pokemon, that's what I should fucking get. What am I doing?
Yeah, what are you doing?
That's all I've heard today, and I swear to God, if I hear one more thing about how upset number 3 is that they still haven't added Litten to Shield yet. I'm like, I don't know how to get you a fucking Litten, please. Somebody tell me how to get a Litten in this kid's game.
I don't know, because I don't know Pokemans.
If you, it's the only way is like if you've played one of the previous games and you sent it to your Pokemon home.
Well, good luck.
And then, or if somebody had it in their Pokemon home and then brought it into Pokemon Shield, they could trade it with her, I think. But like, I don't know. All I know is that I'm constantly being bitched at that all these wonderful Pokemon and they don't have Litten and I don't know why they can't just add Litten. Seven-year-olds are harsh, man.
There was one more game that got added to Game Pass, West of Dead. It launched direct to Game Pass.
Oh, I'm so excited for this.
Are you excited about this one?
Yes, I am. What this is. What we can all hear how excited I am and whether or not it pays off next week.
Yeah.
What's it like?
It is, oh Lord, how the fuck do you explain it? Let me
twin just stick cover up. Roguelike shooter?
That's a good, yeah.
Okay.
With Ron Perlman.
I mean, the moment I was going to say roguelike, if I said I was into it, you should have already known the roguelike was part of it. But
fair enough.
Like, some things are just evident.
Yeah, and Ron Perlman does the voice acting, so that's awesome.
Yeah, it's, I played just a tiny, tiny bit of the beta for it, but I started it up, and I started a level, and then I turned it off, and I said, no. I want to stay excited for this.
Yeah, I want to wait.
And sometimes, like, I wish this cat, if I just disappear, you know that the cat steps on the power button for my computer.
Nice.
Fair enough.
He keeps going back and forth. Normally, he never fucks with over here, but he wants up on top of the curio cabinet, and so he keeps trying to decide if he's going to make
it. I noticed the cat hit the plus button a couple of times on your keyboard.
He did. Yeah. I knew he hit the keyboard. I didn't know what he did yet, but...
Yep.
I was watching, trying to, like, every time I see him do it, I lean over and, like, put my hand over the power button on the computer. He got up on the curio, so maybe he'll quit, but he's been up and down a couple times. But, I started to play it, and then I was just like, no, I want to be surprised, which I wish I had done for Drake Hollow, because I spent so much time playing Drake Hollow, and now I have to wait until July 17th to actually play Drake Hollow. And I'm like, oh, I broke my own rule, and now I have to suffer a month for it.
I got an email about Drake Hollow. There's a preview open beta starting tomorrow, so you don't have to wait. I wonder
if my existing beta... Oh, it's open.
It'll be available the 19th through the 22nd, and it's an open beta that you can sign up for on the Xbox Insider program.
Fuck yes. Yeah. I am so in love with Drake Hollow. I'm going to be in so much trouble when it comes out.
Which, that's coming to Game Pass, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe so.
I think so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was.
I don't know.
I don't care if it is or not. I mean, look, I never ask for codes for review games, but the Molasses Flow follows me on Twitter, and I'll shoot my shot if it means Drake Hollow.
There you go. I mean, you're going to have to, because the Molasses Flood's other game is leaving Game Pass. There's some games leaving Game Pass at the end of the month. A fairly large list. It's sad to see some of these titles going, but Metro Exodus is leaving. ACA Neo Geo Metal Slug X, Life is Strange 2, Neon Chrome, Shadow Tactics, Blades of the Shogun, SteamWorld Dig 2, and The Flame in the Flood are all leaving Game Pass at the end of the month. So play them now if you want to.
I am genuinely surprised at The Flame in the Flood leaving Game Pass, because it has been there since Game Pass launched.
Now, it might be leaving because Drake Hollow. You never know. It
might very well be. Yeah, they might say, hey, look, we're giving you our other goodie game. It's a new one. Let this one float into the abyss as it does. And, yeah. But I own Flame in the Flood, so that's okay. I don't care if it leaves. I got that shit. If you don't have it, then you need to play it. And if you play it and you like it, then you should buy it. And then you should buy it anyway, because it's fucking fantastic.
Some more bad news. Cyberpunk got delayed again.
I'm shocked.
Man, the comments on that were garbage pants.
In what way?
What were they?
People being assholes. like literally just putting fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, and just saying all kinds of horrible shit to the devs on the Twitter account because it mad because it got delayed. And I'm like, man, I'm shocked
by that as well.
A delayed game is eventually good.
You hope.
Yeah.
I mean, if they delay it enough, eventually it's going to be okay.
Well, Duke Nukem Forever is proof that that is not true.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, I like...
But they could have delayed it, and then it would have eventually picked up.
No, it wouldn't.
They could have kept delaying it.
No. 10 years was enough. That
eventually it would have hit the okay mark.
I'm also one of the people that will openly say that I enjoyed Duke Nukem, but it was not good. Like, it's kind of like how you enjoy, like, a B-movie.
Yeah.
You know?
But yeah, Cyberpunk delayed again from September 17th to November 19th. So it's not a huge delay, but I don't know.
Not even enough for people to be mad. Like, I literally don't understand. At this point, you should just be like, fuck yeah, I'm going to get it on the new consoles.
That might be why they're delaying it. Maybe they're delaying it to launch alongside the new consoles.
I could absolutely see that.
They did say in the announcement that the game is done. Like,
done.
All the quests, everything, all the content, all the gameplay, it's there. They just want to take extra time to, like, squash bugs and balance
polish, you know,
mechanics.
Yeah.
And that's nothing to be mad at.
No.
Really not. Like, hey, our game's done, but we want to make it better so that you don't get mad when you play it. People are going to be mad anyway. But I would be far less mad at a polished game than one that just dropped broken as fuck.
Yeah. I don't know. Something I do know is I missed that Root Beer dropped 300 biddies before.
Drop it, bitch!
That's a good bean.
I missed that one. And he said that Ron Perlman dunked on Ted Cruz so hard this week. I missed that. Please tell me what happened.
And Matt Gaetz.
What happened?
They tried to mock him for being the actor that presented Hellboy and, like, tried to make it sound like he was somehow a bad guy because he played Hellboy. And I don't even remember what launched all of it. But, oh my god, it was glorious at the time. Fuck, so much shit happens. I'm Googling it, or searching for it again, because it was too good not to talk about.
Well, while you're looking that up, Square Enix announced Kingdom Hearts Melody of Memory, which looks to be an auto-runner rhythm game of sorts. It is planned for Xbox One, PS4, and Switch, and is coming worldwide later in 2020. So, new Kingdom Hearts should be interesting. It looks cute. It's obviously not a normal mainline Kingdom Hearts game, but it... You know, rhythm games are always interesting to me, so I'm excited to hear more about it.
Mm-hmm.
Can't say that I have any kind of, like, investment into Kingdom Hearts, huh?
No.
None at all.
Yeah, no.
It's on Game Pass, though.
It is. The whole Kingdom Hearts series is on Game Pass.
Did we time how long it took us to bring up Game Pass this time?
We talked about Game Pass earlier, so.
I know, but I wanted to see if we broke any records.
Oh, no. Me and Tim talked about it last episode. We got there in, like, 6 minutes, so.
Just making up for it.
Yeah. Ziggurat Interactive announced that they have purchased the rights to multiple game licenses previously owned by Majesco, including Flip's Twisted World, Blood Rain, Advent Rising, and Raises Hell. I loved Raises Hell, so I am thrilled to see that maybe we might get a remake or remaster of that.
I'm not familiar.
Not with any of them? You should know Blood Rain. Vampire chick.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a shitty movie from Uwe Boll about it.
Yeah. Yep. All right. I remember. Yep.
Yeah.
Still not enough to make me, like, want to go back and be like, oh, I wonder how that is. But, like, yeah, sure. I remember.
Oh, you just had to come back down, didn't you? I found the tweets that we were talking about.
Okay. So, what did it say?
Ted Cruz, shit, I just had it, and then what did he say about something? Ron Perlman said something about Jim Jordan, and Ted Cruz replied, listen, Hellboy, you talk a good game when you've got Hollywood makeup and stuntmen. but I'll bet $10K to the non-political charity of your choice that you couldn't last 5 minutes in the wrestling ring with at Jim Jordan without getting pinned. You up for it, or does your publicist say it's too risky? And then,
isn't he like 70 years old?
Ron Perlman replied, wait, is this D. Ted Cruz? Holy shit, man. Is this the same guy that let little Donnie call his wife a dog and his father an assassin and now kisses his ass? Can I get your autograph, man? And then he said, I'll tell you what, Teddy boy, since mentioning Jim Jordan in wrestling is problematic, why don't we say fuck him and just make it you and me? I'll give $50K to Black Lives Matter and you can keep all the taxpayer money you were thinking of spending.
Wow.
What kind of motherfucker offers to have another guy probably asleep at the time kick somebody else's ass?
Yeah, right? What the fuck?
Wow. I love Ron Perlman.
And he dunked on Matt Gaetz, too. Matt Gaetz. Where did it go? Oh, Matt Gaetz has said that, you know, Hollywood thinks he's an asshole. And so Ron Perlman called him out on, like, he says, while we're at it, fuck boy, what is this shit about playing your crowd with dog whistles like Hollywood, making them think culture is the thing that's keeping them down when it's really you and your greed?
Damn.
And like Matt Gaetz said something about, he said this racial justice warrior had no problem in Hollywood portraying a white supremacist leader of a motorcycle gang. Like somehow who he played was who he actually is.
Yeah, for real.
And Ron Perlman replied, it's so rewarding playing assholes on TV. Tell me, sir, how is it actually being one?
Got him.
So.
Oh, my God. That makes me want to play West the Dead even more.
Yeah. I am 100% down to hear to support anything Ron Perlman is in at this point. So, as if I wasn't already, like, super excited to play, it's immediately better.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned dunking on people. Arcade 1-Up is releasing a new NBA Jam arcade cabinet that comes with NBA Jam, NBA Jam Tournament Edition, and NBA Hang Time. Best of all, this is Arcade 1-Up's first machine to feature Wi-Fi and online play.
I need it. Give it to me.
Wow. It is $4.99.
I need it.
And I want it in my life so bad.
I need it. I need it.
Dude, I definitely need it. Online NBA Jam, like original arcade NBA Jam.
I need it. I need it.
I know. It's important.
How many controls? Four?
I think so.
Four?
I think four.
I need it.
I'll have to look it back up.
Yeah, if it's four, I need it. If it's two, it could suck a dick. Because let's be honest, I mean, if you're gonna have two, like, nobody's gonna buy that, right?
Well,
right?
I mean, it's not like those are massive machines. I mean, oh, and it does have four joysticks. Yes. It has four, so you'll have to be crammed in tight together. Have you seen the Ninja That's Turtles the one with four control sticks?
No.
Oh my god, it is so tiny. But I want one so bad. $4.99 for NBA Jam Wi-Fi enabled arcade cabinet.
Show me.
With riser and stool. It comes with a stool.
Wait, what?
Yeah, man. Comes with a basketball themed NBA Jam stool.
Oh my god. Yeah, I need this.
Yeah, buddy.
Yo, that horribly photoshopped picture on the bottom there, like, of the people playing it and like the stool just like in front of his legs. that's so not even close.
Like, oh my lord.
Wow.
I'm saving that image.
Yeah, I need it. I fucking, oof.
That might be the show's image for this week.
Where did his leg go? Oh, that's a stool.
Speaking of games that people are excited about, our friend Zach Lyons, one of our first listeners on the show, good old Zach Lyons, is thrilled about this news. The Pokemon Company announced new Pokemon Snap, a sequel to the N64 classic, coming to the Switch. How exciting is it to see a new Pokemon Snap game?
I'm excited to see it, and I'm excited to see my entire like Facebook feed flooded with people that now have photography degrees going back and like approaching Pokemon Snap from like a professional viewpoint. And it's going to drive me insane, and I'm going to appreciate it at the same time.
Cole, any thoughts on Pokemon Snap? Are your kids excited?
I'm like, my kids are excited, but it's just more Pokemon I'm going to have to listen about. And hopefully, for the love of God, it better have a Litten in it.
We'll find out. But last bit of news I have is that it has come out that AT&T are apparently in talks to sell Warner Brothers games. Possible suitors rumored to be EA, Activision, and Take-Two. What do you think of WB Games being up for sale?
That is a lot of properties.
They've been sitting on it for a while and not doing much with it, right? Aside from like your Injustices and your
Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Like what else have they been putting out?
I don't know. I mean, they put out Shadow of War. What was that, a year or 2 years ago?
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Some of the Lego games are WB titles.
I would love to have another like a third Shadow game. Shadow of something.
And then included in all those people apparently talking to AT&T about buying Warner Brothers, apparently Microsoft are aware of the fans wanting them to talk to Warner Brothers. What would you think if Xbox bought WB Games?
I wouldn't be mad about it, but I don't know. I was going to say, I don't know that they particularly would have the interest in it, given how many studios they've already scooped up recently. They might be like, nah, we got a full table. But
it could be enough to put them over the edge.
It's true.
You got to think it's got to be a worthwhile idea to consider buying the Mortal Kombat franchise. And then
not
you got
to
wonder,
franchises that they've just been sitting on and not fucking doing anything with.
Is CD Projekt Red under Warner Brothers?
I don't think so.
Because they're listed on Wikipedia under list of Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment video games.
I don't know if they're owned by. I think they're just published by.
They're listed as Cyberpunk 2077 is on this list, as well as Lego Star Wars and Back for Blood by Turtle Rock is on this list. Mortal Kombat 11, Harry Potter, Wizards Unite.
You know what I would actually love to see happen with them buying it? I would love for them to essentially make like their own version of Smash, but like a good 2D fighting game where they would essentially combine like Killer Instinct and fucking Mortal Kombat.
Why don't we just get Mortal Kombat versus Killer Instinct?
I would shit my pants.
So would
I hopped into Killer Instinct the other night and played it on PC and had a really good time.
Oh, man. Yeah, but that's the news I got. Any news anyone else want to talk about, or should we dive into reviews? I know we've been going for a while now.
I'm down to give my review.
Yeah, you're actually doing a review this week, Chris. I'm excited.
I am. I haven't done a review in years.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exciting. But, you know, a special occasion calls for a special reviewer. And the first game to talk.
How about the timing about this shit?
I know. Seriously.
Like, it was. As soon as I read the headlines for, like, the skate stuff, I was just like, dude, it couldn't have worked out any better.
It's like skateboarding games are exploding now between Tony Hawk Remaster, Skate 4 getting announced, Skate Bird coming, And now, just launching this week on Xbox Game Preview, the first game to talk about tonight is called Session. Developed and published by Creature Studios, it released June 17th on Xbox Game Preview for $19.99. Inspired by the golden era of skateboarding, Session's primary goal is to make you experience what skateboarding really is, an incredible culture where there are no goals other than expressing your creativity and achieving success through hard work, perseverance, and bits of madness for no one else other than yourself. Chris, tell us about Session.
You know what? I think the way that it described itself was a perfect way to lead into like how to lead expectations of what this game really is. Okay. And I kind of touched on it before with saying that there are newer games like Session and Skater XL, which if you're not familiar with Skater XL as well, those are the two games that are really like kind of creating this resurgence in skateboarding games that you're mentioning, Joe, because these are more of simulations that are supposed to they're supposed to embody the free-flowing nature and expression of just like riding a skateboard, right? It's a very big difference between like how Skate 3 handles like, okay, do this trick at this time or hit this rail and score so many points. Like there's points involved, so things are like inherently like there's better tricks. But now with things like Session, it's really more about like trying to make it feel like the controls be something different. It's kind of similar to how the skate controls were in the sense that like old Skate 3 was your right thumbstick controls all of the movement of the board. Left thumbstick would control your body, right? So the way that Session works is that your left foot is your left thumbstick. Your right foot is the right thumbstick. To turn, you actually use both triggers. So you're thinking of it as if you're like when you're putting pressure on the triggers, it's like you're shifting your shoulders, right? So as long as you're thinking of it in the way of like, all right, what would I want this, like, what would I want my right foot to do and my left foot to do to make sure that I would, like do a certain type of flip trick in a certain way. Session, the way that it treats its like its ollies and flip tricks and stuff like that, it's kind of, I don't know. There's certain things that you can achieve with the way that they're doing their flip trick system that makes it seem a lot more natural to someone that does skateboard or at least has a background in skateboarding. There's a lot of tricks, surprising amount of tricks, like a lot more than there was as far as like flip tricks are concerned. There's a lot of, and the way that you do them, like what's considered like a pressure kick flip and a pressure heel flip. You can't do those in like skate games, like regular like EA skate games. However, grabs and stuff like that are still being like worked out. Like this is a game preview thing, so it's still very much like an what they consider like an alpha stage, alpha beta ish kind of stage.
Yeah.
So as far as amount of content, there's not a lot. There's a handful of stages, which is better than when it first started out, because I actually I bought this on Steam when it first got released. As far as the Xbox versus PC release, pretty much the same. So they're basically at the same exact like development point in time. And the way that it felt, obviously, like, you know, you're not going to be shocked by this, Joe, but I prefer the PC version just because.
Blows my mind. Right. Blows my mind.
Here's the primary thing that I feel like it's going to take the longevity of this title and games like this and Skater XL is the mod community, right? So you're going to have so many more people creating levels and stuff like that on the PC side of things versus Xbox. Now, with that being said, I would love to see Session embrace how Microsoft has been embracing some of the mod support for certain games. If they could do that on Xbox, I think you would see a lot of people that would start to take this game a little bit more seriously just because it wouldn't be limited by the amount of content that's being put forth from the developers themselves.
No.
Right. And the way that Session is doing a lot of their stuff. It's kind of back like how they did it with Skate, where they were doing motion capture. So a lot of the animations and stuff like that, they are unique. So like depending on like where you do your flip tricks, it will angle the board a certain way. Depending on there's a lot more variables involved. So you do get a little bit more of a sense of like individuality with each trick. It's not like the same animation every single time. The way that Skater XL does it, I'm kind of more impressed by, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with Skater XL at all, but like they're kind of like in the same vein. I think Skater XL is supposed to get a game preview on Xbox as well, no?
I'm not sure. I know it's supposed to come to console. I just don't know what their plans are for it, if it's just going to full release or if they're doing a game preview, or I'm not too sure.
So here's what's really interesting about the way that Skater XL handles it. And I just want to put this forward to you as like a comparative thing, just even if you haven't played either of them, right? So the way that Skater XL works is it's kind of similar that you're using left thumbstick and right thumbstick to do each foot. However, there's no animations in the game. So like when you go to pop a trick and you flick a stick in a certain direction, you're actually hitting the board as like a physical object, and it's taking like a physics engine to spin the board naturally like it would and then bring it back. So you're not like mo-capping someone and then having them do a kickflip and then just have it be like, okay, that's how your guy does a kickflip. It's just, no, you're controlling the legs, and depending on how fast you flick or like what error, like what portion of the board that you're flicking, it will come out a certain way. That is really impressive to me because it is, everything is physics based.
Yeah.
However, it does make it look a little clunky because it's more simulatory style as opposed to Session. Like you'll see, like even just putting them back, like side to side, Session visually looks a lot cleaner and tighter. Like there's better shaders. I think the maps are designed a little bit better. Just in the state that they're in right now. What's really interesting about both of these games kind of coming out and like going toe to toe with trying to occupy the space that Skate 4 is leaving open, or the lack of a Skate 4 is leaving open, I should say. like both of them are kind of in this same part of the cycle where they're building the game up, but they don't have a shit ton of content. And I think ultimately that's the thing that may, it could help or it can hurt it, depending on how they pursue like adding more content to it and how often they're going to do it. This game at $20, to me, I've already well gotten my amount of entertainment out of it. Like I think on Steam, I have about 20 hours played in it. Now, for a sandboxy beta-ish kind of thing, it's actually a pretty significant amount of time for what's here. Because this is definitely just kind of like if you need to kill a little bit of time, you can kind of hop in, ride around, do your thing. There's no, like, again, there are challenges in the game where it's like, all right, go to this spot in the level, do this certain trick, and it will recognize it and give you like dollars for doing it, but there's nothing to spend the dollars on. Like literally nothing. Like all of the cosmetics and stuff that are in the game right now that are available, it's just available. So you could just swap out some of the stuff. There's a very limited amount of customization options, but there are some. So at least you don't have to look the same as everybody else. Again, that could be addressed later on down the road. They're already getting some really good pro companies on board with sponsoring some stuff and getting their stuff licensed into the game. So they're getting some heavy hitters that are at least like, putting some sort of effort into developing it, or at least like giving it their blessing. But as a sim, as something that you could just kind of hop into and just enjoy the game for what it is and the experience of just riding around and doing your thing, I do enjoy it. I think it's, If you are a fan of the Skate series, then it's an easy recommend at $20.
Okay.
You may find yourself lacking, like wanting more out of it. But at least like every single time I sit down and I play it, like I'm just like, I wish there was more in this game.
Well, that's something you could expect to come in time because it's still in game preview.
Exactly. So, I mean, with keeping that in mind, it's pretty comfortable to say that it's worth trying to grab. If you are really into skateboarding and you enjoy the skate series, if you're a casual, like, enjoyer of skateboarding, I might stay away from it just because the controls are so, like, if you thought there was a learning curve to skate, the learning curve for this is much harder, in my opinion. However, they at least take into consideration there's a lot more customization in the way that the game works, as far as like there's like three or four different difficulty settings, and it depends on how you're doing your rotations, like how accurate do you have to be with trying to like grind a ledge, or even if you're rotated a little bit too much, you'll just bail every single time. There's a lot of customization to the way that the engine works, which I can really appreciate. So the people that really want to deep dive into it and make sure that it feels good, you can do that. So yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's something that I could like absolutely like blanket recommend to everybody, but there's definitely some people that will hop into it and enjoy that it's not Tony Hawk and that it's, you know, it's something different, and yeah, it's something that actually tries to capture what riding a board is really like.
Yeah. Well, at $20, what is your official verdict?
I would say absolutely buy it.
Cool. All right. Well, Chris, thank you as always for coming on the show. It's good having you on. Yeah. We will let you get going. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. I will, like I told you the other day, you know, my rehearsals are going to be like starting back up on Thursdays. But if I do have some time available, I will let you know, because I'd like to hop in and do this a little bit more often for you. So
I would love to have you on more often.
Yeah, man. Thank you. And we'll have to play some games or something. You know, whenever you got some time, I'm hopping in and out of like some stuff. Again, like I'm grinding magic and stuff, but
yeah,
you know, let me know when I'm on.
Clear your schedule for July 23rd. That's a Thursday. Clear your schedule. Join us for that one, because that's episode 600. It is right around the corner. We are almost at 600.
Mm-hmm.
How crazy is that?
That is very crazy. That's 23rd, you said?
Yep.
Okay. The day before Carl's unavailable. Okay. Got it.
Cool. Well, we will let you get going. You have yourself a wonderful night, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. You too, guys. Thanks for having me.
Bye.
quick thank you to No Time for Games, who just dropped another 300 biddies in chat. The biddies are flowing today. George, yeah, take it away.
Dropping bits! Ah! All over your fucking face! Ah! Wet pancakes!
Wet pancakes indeed. Thank you, George. And thank you, No Time. Love the biddies. The cup is full. The cup is so full. I don't know what to do. So many biddies.
It's not slow enough, though.
It's slow. It's plenty slow. Don't make it slower.
Is that a challenge?
No, because the next game to talk about is called Disintegration, developed by V1 Interactive, published by Private Division, released June 16th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $49.99. Disintegration is a sci-fi FPS combined with RTS elements. Pilot a heavily weaponized grav cycle while commanding your troops on the ground as you battle through a thrilling single-player campaign and in frenetic PvP multiplayer. Cole, tell us about Disintegration.
So Disintegration is pretty much as you just described it initially. It is a first-person shooter with RTS elements. Players take control of a futuristic robot that pilots what's called a grav cycle. And the grav cycle can shoot, but most importantly, it lets you control your ground troops. So this is where the RTS elements come in, as you can give your troops directions on where to go, what enemies to focus on in combat, and also you can use different types of troops have different special abilities, so like they can call in mortar strikes, which you can order. I really, really had high hopes for Disintegration. When you first offered it to me and I looked it up, I saw that some of the Halo, original Halo devs had worked on it. And I thought, you know what? That's a good sign. That's these are people who have a history of changing first person shooters. And so Disintegration, for all intents and purposes, made me feel like it was going to change the way I looked at this genre. And then I played it. And it very much did not change how I felt about the genre. I was genuinely surprised that a game with such an interesting take on mishmashing two very different genres together could feel so dull in its campaign. Between story missions, you are able to explore like a hub, and I'm going to be straight up honest. I thought for a couple times I was playing Anthem in this hub. I was like, this feels familiar. Walk around and talk to this NPC. Walk around and talk to that NPC. Get some generic backstory. And then a couple of them will give you a challenge to add in for you going on to the next mission, but ultimately you just go up to the desk and press to start the next mission. Like, if you don't complete the challenges, big whoop, it doesn't have any real effect on the story or anything like that. It's just, oh, well, go collect some extra scrap, and hey, well, now you can use that scrap to upgrade. Well, that's the end of it. There's no driving force to go do it other than just the game told you to. Which is disappointing. I wanted there to be more rhyme and reason to the things that you were doing. I wanted to really push this grav cycle idea to its fullest. And I thought, how cool is it that you can hover above your team and tell them where to go, but also rain down bullets to help them out? But then I learned very quickly that, you can't go more than 15 meters up. That's yeah. It. 15 meters, you hit the wall. Like, you created this incredible idea where you're in this grav cycle and you can, you know, hover above the battlefield. And then it's like, no. There's a very low glass ceiling. And it just took away from the strategy element. Like, when I'm playing a strategy game, I like to have a lot of control over the camera and be able to really get in and zoom in and pull out. And it kind of felt like the grav cycle was more just a sentient camera that was very locked and limited. I was really disappointed in how little it added to the gameplay, given the kind of idea that it was. There just seemed to be so much more opportunity that wasn't really taken on here.
No.
For what is there, and it's not entirely fair for me to be like, it could have been this, because, you know, there's limits, and I get it. It's indie development, and we see it all the time. You know, where there's grand ideas that just get held down by the walls. But that usually doesn't mean the gameplay is literally held down by the glass wall. It just would have been so much more if you could actually get in and explore and move around the battlefield more freely. I did play on story mode, because if you play on the higher difficulties, you actually take damage, like if you hit your grav cycle into terrain and stuff. And so I didn't want to have to deal with that, you know, my hands being what they are. So I do appreciate that there was a story difficulty. There's easy. And then there's two higher ones. I didn't even fucking look. I was like, oh, easy. Let's go. I will say there were some really cool elements of world destruction, and that I was super into. But even that was really surprisingly limited. That you would have these battles where there were just, you know, these swarms of enemies moving around on the ground. And I'm sure the higher difficulties had more. So I'm trying not to be like, oh, there wasn't that many enemies. That's my fault. I played on bitch mode. I acknowledge that. But they would hide around the elements, and it would be so cool for there to be like a stack of the stack of pallets, and like, you know, just watch them shatter into smithereens. You can get super good detail because, of course, you're up in the air floating until you're kind of a distance away, but you could just see just things crumbling around. However, in one of the earlier levels, there's these just huge redwood trees, and it's fucking gorgeous. Don't get me wrong. But with how much detail was put into the destruction physics on all the buildings and stuff, these redwood trees didn't take a hit. And you're like, that's a missed opportunity too. Because it would have been so cool to see. Because, you know, if you're blasting through concrete barriers and crumbling them to dust, that hitting these redwood trees would eventually cut those motherfuckers down. And how cool would it be to just like watch it fall and actually land on, but just nothing happens. They don't even get a bullet hole. And you're like, come on, you have it so right in so many parts. And then you're just sitting here going, I laid into a fucking tree forever. I was like, I'm going to get this. Like, watch this. Everything else explodes. This has to explode too. Nothing. So, I mean, there's so many good, really cool elements that they've put in. But then also you expect, because it works in one instance, you think, okay, then they've clearly thought of this for more of the world, but they just didn't. It's just like, blow this up, be happy that it blew up, go on, move. Yeah. Very linear storytelling, very, very cut and dry. And actually, it was really kind of boring. I feel bad saying that, but nothing about the story wrote me in and was like, you have to watch this cutscene so you know what's going on. You have to listen to this story to get more detail. I was just like, this is just generic future shooter.
No.
And I was really hoping for more. It looks so cool. And they did such a good design job on the character models. And I was really into the way everything looked, but there was a lot of potatoes and no meat. That said, there's also a multiplayer side. Mm-hmm. We got to talk about multiplayer. It's there. Okay.
Yeah, we played multiplayer earlier. I thought it was fun. I had fun with it, despite the fact that we kept getting our asses kicked. Mm-hmm. Although that was probably because I was on the team dragging everybody down. Although you on took the one second
that one game.
Yeah, I took second. You were in last place that one, so
I was getting fucked. Yeah. But I was also like purposely trying out all the different guns and stuff.
Yeah.
And I did notice that there was some imbalance with the weapons. One character, the way that you choose your ship and your crew and everything, you choose a crew, and each crew has like a set of weapons that and a bonus that works for them, like weapons and a skill. So, like the Mortes, who look super cool and are decked out in sugar skulls and look like they're straight out of Coco, they have shotguns. Neon Dreams are very Tokyo-ish and neon cyberpunky, and they have SMGs, essentially, is what they are. And then there's one, I don't even remember what the fucking crew was. It was the one I used the most, but they had the autocannons. If you were playing with Neon Dreams, and I wanted to because I love that fire rate on those SMGs, you fire fast as fuck, but it was literally like throwing pea gravel at the other team. They took no damage at all. Just nothing. However, if I swapped back over to those autocannons, it was just chunk, 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 and they were just falling like flies.
Yeah.
That was the game where I was doing so poorly because I was trying to figure out what I was doing wrong with those SMGs. And it, there was nothing I was doing wrong. It's just that they're so poorly balanced that the other team was just plowing me down before I could even hit anything.
Yeah. It really did seem like if you're new to this game, you're going to get wrecked.
Yeah. Yeah. The learning curve, it's not even that there's a learning curve. It's just that you're either good or you're bad.
Yeah. And there I'm bad.
And I'm not is the terrible part. Like, I was doing really well. The one of the earlier games that we played, I just took the long ass way around. I got a badge for traveling the most in the game because I literally went the long ass way around the map. And then I just came up and I plowed through the whole team.
Well, yeah, you had to go the long way around because they kept spawn camping us, which
they were sitting right at our spawn. And so I went the long way around. I come up behind them and I took the whole team out while they were just sitting there picking at everybody else. Again, God bless the autocannons, because if I'd been using anything else, it wouldn't have worked out that way. But I do want to point out there are microtransactions, which is fine on one hand. I get it. You need to make extra money in game dev. It's a thing. But the microtransactions in Disintegration are surprisingly expensive for very little. It's all cosmetic, thankfully, which is great when the game is already horribly unbalanced. But if you're wanting to buy not even a different skin for the characters for your crew, but just a different set of colors for their crew skin, doesn't change the way the skins look other than the color scheme on them, it's $5. If you want the more rare ones, they're $10. Just for a color scheme.
Yeah. And to be fair, you can earn the currency in game.
Very
slow. It's slow, but you can earn it in game.
Yeah. But it's, they really want you to buy it.
Yeah. Well, that's how all games are.
And it's a lot. Yeah. I mean, if you were to buy,
I mean, Rocket League, their fucking prices are shit now too. So.
Rocket League is just $10 for the battle pass, and you can earn the credits. I bought one battle pass and haven't bought any of the others because they're free from the credits I earn back.
I'm talking about their store, though, like the items in the store.
Oh, I don't ever buy the items in the store because I buy the battle pass. But that's for buying past items that you can't get anymore. And there's only one item that I would buy if I saw it in the store. But I mean, if you bought all of the skins for just one crew set, you would be paying $30 just for colors.
Yeah.
So, and there's 9 crews.
Yeah.
So that gets pricey fast. Anyway, as far as netcode goes, while we were playing the games, they played fine. We didn't have any trouble with lag or issues like that, other than people just being better than us. Finding games were a different story. We were playing at 3:30 in the afternoon, not my typical 3 a.m. multiplayer searches. No. But we were playing at 3:30 in the afternoon. First game found pretty quickly. It was under a minute, but then there was, how long did you say it was taking about to... Once you find a match, then it goes to like a screen that literally says loading game assets.
Yeah, the load times were noticeable and long.
And waiting for player. And it was like another minute and a half from there. And go ahead.
I know the one game that we searched, it took us over 6 minutes before we just gave up and researched.
Yep.
And then we found one in like a minute.
And we were getting poor connection alerts on some of the games, even though we're both hardwired and NATs were open and things. So whoever we had caught up to as a host was not working out for us. So we're going to pretend like it was host advantage that we lost everything.
Oh, man. But, well, we've spent 20 minutes talking about Disintegration. We need to have a verdict. $50 on this one. What do you think of it?
I think that there are people that it's going to appeal to and they're going to love it. I wasn't that person. And at that price point, it's a lot harder for me to be like, oh yeah, buy this up. I can justify a try it because, like I said, it's definitely for somebody, but I wanted more.
Yeah. I at least applaud them for trying something different with, you know, the first person shooter with RTS elements.
It is
being
it
able
is
to control minions
mashup.
is a neat mashup. So I could agree with you on a try it. I don't know if I'm going to get into the single player just because I suck at first person shooters, but
it's, and I think that the first person shooter aspect of it takes enough of a backseat that you would probably be okay.
I don't know. I have to give it a go. But next game to talk about is called Goosebumps Dead of Night, developed and published by Cosmic Forces, released June 12th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $39.99. And Goosebumps Dead of Night, the best-selling Goosebumps franchise, has been reimagined as a first-person spooky survival adventure game. Experience three chapters of stealth gameplay with 3D graphics and chilling AI monsters. Cole, tell us about Goosebumps Dead of Night.
So I have a habit on the show of saying that I don't have the nostalgia factor that a lot of you guys have toward games. But when it comes to Goosebumps, I've got the nostalgia factor. I loved the Goosebumps books as a kid. I literally had shelves and shelves of them. I read them every chance I could get. For some reason, this is my first time playing a Goosebumps game. And I was pleasantly surprised. I'm going to be honest. I've heard a lot of people rag on the previous Goosebumps games that they weren't any good. I didn't go in with high hopes. I was like, if it mentions some of the books and I recognize some of the characters, I'm probably just going to be happy. but I was really pleasantly surprised that it's not scary. It's very much kid-friendly horror. Goosebumps is. But there were moments where I would be playing that I would like feel a little tingle on the back of my neck and be like, that's horribly an uncomfortable moment. and I was on board for it. It was funny. I was playing it and number one was watching me. That child hates jump scares. But because she is my kid, she has that R.L. Stine nostalgia as well. And so she was watching me play it. And there were moments where we would just like, I would startle and I would scream. And then I'd be like, this is a goddamn kid's game. And I'd set the controller down and be mad at myself. And it's not even that it's scary, but it's that good, wholesome, goofy horror that you can just enjoy, you know? I absolutely adore that about R.L. Stine's work. You start off in R.L. Stine's mansion. You're in his office and he is possessing the typewriter. He is trapped inside of it. And your first task is to go and find some ink ribbon so that he can continue to talk to you. So you'll be stuck exploring R.L. Stine's big, creepy, haunted mansion. And Slappy, the horrible ventriloquist dummy that we all know from R.L. Stine's book, is his most memorable character. That little shit has stolen the books and ripped pages out and brought the monsters from Goosebumps into the house. So you need to actually go and find the pages of the books and put the books back together to help make the monsters go away. While you're doing this, those monsters are going to be creeping around, lurking up on you. There are some moments in the game that very much feel Emily Wants to Play-ish. Don't stay in the dark for too long, for example, or Murder the Clown will come after you and he will murder you in horrific jump scary ways. I don't want to say the gameplay is not bad, but it's not, it's definitely meant to be kid friendly. And so the books, are, they sparkle and they're out in the open. They're very obvious and kind of easy to find. The pages, your controller vibrates if you have vibration turned on when you're close to one. The narrator will flat out say there are one or more pages in this room, so you know to look there. It doesn't necessarily leave you like floundering around. It's very kid friendly and suitable for younger audiences. I would say I love number three, but she's a chicken shit. And so she already has night terrors.
I love my child, but fuck her, really.
She has night terrors on a good night. Like, she sleeps with Christmas lights wrapped around her bed and her dad's hat over her eyes. So she's chicken shit. She could not play Goosebumps and be okay. Number two, number one. Absolutely. Number one was just laughing her ass off. Like, the clown would pop up. She hates creepy clowns. The clown would pop up and she would be like, you know, nope, I'm out. And then we would laugh about it and we would carry on. I think it's really one of those, like, if you're considering, is this a good game for a kid to play? Then you would have to just consider like what their tolerance for scary is, because there are definitely moments where like that clown pops up and you are just, oh, bitch, I'm out. I got chills on my neck just thinking about that fucker looking around. Oh, God. There was one time I very much thought I was in a well-lit room and I was not. And that fucker got me. I was like, I'm in a well-lit room. I'm hiding under a table. Shit's fine. And then it's like, there are one or more pages in this room. And so I turn around while I'm in the hiding place and that fucking clown was behind me. Jesus Christ, I was not okay.
Oh, Lord.
So I had a really good time with it, a lot better time than I expected. I do think it's a little stiff. It's not the most responsive game. I did set up the sensitivity like mad, and I was still a little frustrated with it, especially because there is one like mini game where you have to chase these gnomes around to get pages and keys from them. The game, this is my number one complaint. Like, I can tolerate the stiffness of the controls. The game has a stamina system and you have to chase these gnomes around. But if you make too much noise, then the monsters come for you. But also, don't stay in the dark too long. But also, go get that gnome. It's a little much. A difficulty setting that gets rid of the stamina gauge would be great. Because I would chase after those fucking gnomes. And then I would get caught because I made too much noise running after the gnomes and ran out of breath. And then I would have to start over again. Thankfully, the checkpoints are very forgiving. But it was like, make up your mind. Do you want me to chase after these fuckers, or do you not want me to make noise and not run out of breath? You can't have it both ways. I was a little surprised by the difficulty for that one particular mini game, especially because everything else was like so minor that I think if it weren't for the fact that number three said chicken shit, she could have played it. But she just
shit talking your own child.
She doesn't enjoy being scared. She's like her dad. Her dad's a chicken shit. He couldn't handle watching me play it. He's, you know, chicken shit itis is hereditary.
Nice. Well, $40 on this one. What are your thoughts?
I was pleasantly surprised. It is a little high priced.
Yeah, it's, I would have loved to see this one at like $30.
But I'm kind of still okay going with a buy it because it was such a laugh and a good time. And all that nostalgia is there. Like, I recognized almost all the characters. They were from the original books and it was so cool to see them creeping in and stuff. And it was really a good time.
And shout out to them for getting Jack Black for the game too.
Yeah. That was actually pretty cool.
Most games, like Kung Fu Panda games, they just deal with the sound alike. Mm-hmm. And Goosebumps is like, fuck it, we are getting Jack Black. We're doing
this.
They're
in there, yeah.
Yeah. All right, next game to talk about is called Rigid Force Redux, developed by COM8, COM1, published by HeadUp, released June 5th on Xbox One and Switch for $19.99. Classic shoot-em-up action in modern 3D, blast off and take down hordes of infected aliens and dreadful machines programmed on waging an intergalactic war against mankind. Cole, what is Rigid Force Redux?
I have never loved and hated a shmup so much at the same time.
You have me interested. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's quite a way to start it, isn't it? I'd love to tell you that I pay close attention to the story here, but this is a shmup, and I skipped the cutscenes. I just wanted to murder things. If I wasn't already on a government watch list, I sure should am now. you have a ship? Don't know why. Skipped it. you have a ship and you shoot shit. Sometimes they're like mechanical bugs jumping out of the ground. Sometimes they're little mechs on two legs strolling around. Sometimes they look like mechanical crabs. Sometimes they are big oversized Venus fly traps with unruly tentacles that are trying to stab you. It gets a little unusual. and I probably would know why if I didn't skip the cutscenes. But either way, I had fun murdering the shit that it threw at me. When I say, though, that I love and hate it, I have to address the reasons why I hate it. Obviously, I love it because it's a shmup, and if you know me, I super love shmups. I really just enjoy side-scrolling games that let you just murder things. indiscriminately. Is it moving? Shoot it. Is it an asteroid? Don't care. Shoot it, too. But when I say that I loved it and hate it, I have to say that there's some elements to it that are not the best. For one, there's the hitbox is kind of odd. I never could quite place where it was. And you take damage in the game, A, from hitting bullets, obviously, because it's a shmup, but B, also from hitting the environment. And there were times where I was never entirely sure if I was actually going to hit the environment or not. And then there were times where I like, I'm fucking not going to hit that. I'm clear. And then I'd hit it and I'd be like, I hate this. I don't understand. If I Stardust Galaxy Warriors gave you the option to turn on a red circle over your hitbox, I just want every shmup to have that now. I hold every shmup to Stardust Galaxy Warrior standards of, can I see where my hitbox is? If not, I'm mad at you. If yes, fuck yeah, let's go. Not a lot of them take that approach, but they all should. That is literally just, it's the most mundane thing. It's just, give me a little red dot that says don't hit this. All I'm asking for in this world. the reason that it's a bigger issue is like, if it were just your ship you had to worry about, it'd be like, fine, whatever. But the big mechanic is that you can hit LB and RB. As you pick up power-ups, you get these drones that help shoot around you, which is fucking awesome. And you hit LB and RB, and you can change the drone placement. So you can change if their focus firing in the front, if their firing is more spread out, or if they're firing in front and behind you, or if they're all just focused on behind you. And it's super cool to be able to like rearrange your ship to do the most amount of damage, because there are enemies that will come up behind you. And a lot of times shmups like to pull that, oh, look, something's behind you, and then be like, fuck you, you can't turn around. Fuck you, you can't shoot backward. Well, then what are you supposed to do? You just have to watch whatever cool thing was animated to come up behind you and not do anything about it. And it usually bites you in the ass unless you dodge it. And I'm not here to dodge things biting me in the ass. I'm here to shoot shit because it's a shmup. So it's super cool that I can rearrange my weaponry to shoot behind me when shit's trying to bite me in the ass. But because you can always rearrange, you never know what's actually going to get you through and clear, right? And okay. So that is the biggest issue. In later levels as well, you actually have obstacles where you have to shoot to clear your path. And you can be like, oh, yeah, I've cleared everything. I'm good. I'm going to fit through. And then you don't fit through. And then there are other times where you're like, I'm not going to fit through. But then you realize that your shit just clips through the obstacle anyway. And you're like, okay, well, clearly that's not my hitbox. But then later you hit it and you're like, never mind, that's my hitbox. It doesn't fucking know. and neither do I. So that's my only real complaint with the game. Like, if I could just get that shit on lock, that would be great. The other things are more quality of life complaints. Well, that's not true. One is a visual complaint, then the rest are quality of life. So let's get to the visual complaint. I don't know if this is just an issue that I had, if this is an issue that's because I was on an S and not an X or literally any other platform. Sometimes strange things happen because I'm on a 1S. And I also couldn't figure out party time. I couldn't figure out if what was happening was related to any one power up or anything. It happened at randomly, but what it was at random, my ship would start to blink. And I don't mean like it's blinking. I mean like a big black octagon would blink over my ship. Or it would be a small black circle just blinking over one of my weapons or over all the weapons or over just a big ass black square or just like it was like the game was literally just skipping frame information in this area at random whenever it decided to do it. I don't know what the fuck was causing this. I tried so many things, like so many different situations. I would go into a sequence and it would happen. And so I would purposely die and come back into that sequence and pick up a different power up and try to change, you know, what I was going into it with to make some kind of difference. And it never did. Like it was always just, it would never happen at the same spot. It would never happen with the same items. It would never happen with different items. It was so random and different parts of the game. It would happen on one playthrough and on the next playthrough. Cause clearly if you fucking die and you don't use all your continues, you gotta start all over again. unless you start it and it does let you choose if you want to start on later missions. So, cause like there are achievements tied to doing certain things in certain missions and you can choose to play missions, chapter select style. But if you're playing properly, you know, just start that shit over again. But, you know, I would start all over anew and just constantly try all these different scenarios. Whether or not the blinking occurred was just top of the head random. Like, I have no basis for what made it happen. But it was one of the most damning aspects of the game because then how are you supposed to know if you're hitting shit or not? If you can't even see where your ship is because there's a big black octagon in the middle of the screen. I can't even be like, oh, well, the bigger and more weapons I had, the more it happened or whatever. It was just, I don't know.
No.
I don't know. Beyond that, like I said, one quality of life complaint, you have to hold down the left trigger to like suck up the energy from the things that you kill. I ain't got time for that. If you hold the left trigger, it slows you down while you're sucking up the energy. And, I would like, for the sake of hand fatigue, if that was automatic, like if I fly over it, let me have it, you know?
No.
Because constantly trying to press the trigger or hold the trigger throughout the duration of the game, both of them cause just extreme hand fatigue. And I'm not cool with that. But it did help to use my hair triggers and, you know, lock my triggers down so that I didn't have to pull it all the way back. Did make a difference. And especially if I needed to be able to go a little faster, I could just let go. no. and move more quickly. But I would, for the sake of disabled players, be like, hi, yeah, don't make me do that. But yeah, other than that, man, I had a fucking awesome time with this game.
Well, then, go ahead.
I just kept, like, I would stop, get an arcade stick already, Root Beer said. I really need to just break down and get an adaptive controller and suck it up. But I just, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I got jump scared by the damn clown in Goosebumps, and I put my controller down and I sit and I looked at the screen for a second. I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna go play Rigid Redux.
Well, then $20. What's your verdict on Rigid Force Redux?
I would like to see some things fixed, but as a shmup, I think it's super cool and there's some really good ideas. I'm going to go with a recommended try it. I'd love to give it a buy it, but man, that blinking thing's got to be fixed.
Makes sense. Yeah. So hopefully they hear that, they listen to the feedback, and they take care of whatever the hell is wrong. They might also already be aware of it, and it might be in the works. So,
yep. Yeah, I would easily be like, hey, buy this. This was a fuck ton of fun. But, you know, quality of life, there's some things to think about there. And, yeah, that blinking's got to go.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Deck of Ashes, developed by AY Games, published by Buka Entertainment and Whisper Games, released June 9th on Steam for $19.99. Deck of Ashes is an adventure game with tactical card combat. One character at a time, lead the cast of anti-heroes on a quest for redemption, explore the cursed fantasy world, and hunt down powerful cards, forge a unique battle deck, and crush your foes. Can you rid the world of the Ash Curse? Cole, what is the Ash Curse?
The Ash Curse is out because my team of anti-heroes did a dumb. And so I would love to tell you more than that, but that's about as far as I got because this game's fucking hard.
Oh, God.
I know that the Ash King is looking for me and that sometimes there is he breaks up the board and the map gets unruly and shit goes haywire. And like I said, it's just fucking hard. You have a team of four anti-heroes. They all suck. They're all horrible people. I don't know. I like to play as the woman who was burned for being a witch, but she actually was a witch. And so she's like, she can revive herself. She's pretty cool. The other ones make the game harder and then fuck them. She, if she dies, she just respawns back at the camp and you don't lose shit. So I want to first start off with saying that I was drawn to Deck of Ashes, not only because it's a card battling roguelike, and so therefore, duh, but also because the art style is just super fucking cool. It looks very much like a comic book or a graphic novel. It gave me Walking Dead vibes with the art style. I was very into it. Don't necessarily love all the character models. It's very much made for male players who want to see scantily clad witch ladies. It's fine. There's fan a lot service. Of focus on. Yeah, there's a lot of fan service and side boob. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the screenshots on Steam. That's a lot of titty in this game.
That's a lot of boob. And, you know, fine. It doesn't appeal to me. But it doesn't necessarily take away from the game. It just, when I see it, I'm like, that's a thing, you know? But the art style's cool. So, whatever. There's that. It is what drew me into it, as well as it being a card battling roguelike. I will say this is one of the most difficult card battling roguelikes that I have picked up. I like to fancy myself as being pretty good at this genre now. I like to think that, you know, I mean, I haven't beat Act 4 of Slay the Spire, but I've beat Act 3 with all three characters, so I got my wits about me on how to play a card battling roguelike. I can't get my head around Deck of Ashes. And I've tried really hard. I think I've put something like 25, 30 hours.
Jeez.
Just trying. But the upgrading systems and everything, it's overly complicated. Like, it's not just a stop off on your way to a boss, stop off and find a merchant and upgrade. It's, you have this type of currency for one type of upgrade. You have this type of currency for that type of upgrade. It's so fragmented and broken down that it's not like, oh, you earned coins. Congrats. Now what do you want to do with them? It's, no, you don't have enough of this chalice looking thing, and you don't have enough of this triangle looking thing. And I'm like, I don't know how I'm supposed to upgrade anything. And then it's like, well, the boss is coming for you, get fucked. And I'm like, rip. another thing with it that adds to the difficulty is, once you've played cards, they go to your deck of ashes. Ta-da. You can't reuse it unless you renew it. So after a battle, you get a handful of renew points. But if you, specifically with the character that I was using, if I wanted to renew my cards in battle, I would have to, use up my health just to get cards back in my hand. When you start off with only like 5 cards, that's all you're doing is using up your health and constantly trying to pull your health back. I don't necessarily want to say it's poorly balanced, but it makes it excessively difficult to feel like you're making any progress because you're constantly killing yourself over and over just to even find a footing. And to an extent, like, you expect that with a roguelike, but you also expect to at least by the end of it know what the name of the fucking currencies are. And I'm like, hey, look, I don't have enough of the triangles. Because I don't know what they are. You have your camp. Of course, there's a different type of merchant for every type of upgrade, for every different type of currency, for every different type of card and skill tree. And it's excessive. It's a lot. It's over the top. I think I could probably put 200 hours into Deck of Ashes and still be like, I don't know what the name of the triangle thingies is. I will.
They're called the triangle thingies, obviously.
Fuck. I will say, on the plus side, it does do one of my favorite card battling game tricks, where if you hover over something, it explains it in dummy terms for you. Except for the currencies. Fuck those. I don't know why. But they're down at the bottom. Can't get to them. You just have them or you don't. But like if a character has a skill, for example, like the witch has the pyro bombs, then you can hover over the word pyro bomb. It will tell you how long it lasts, what you can expect it to do. For example, I didn't know what the fuck the renewing was, and I didn't realize that it was going to damage me, and I hovered over it. I was like, oh yeah, this is going to hurt. Okay, cool. Now I know it's going to damage me. So at least it does try to explain shit to you, but the learning curve is still so steep, even with it holding your hand and being like, hey, dumbass, that's going to hurt, that you're like, well, fuck it, let's do it anyway, because that's the only hope for actually playing. You have an overworld map when you leave the campsite, and you are able to explore around. The camp does have lines in a Slay the Spire, Pirate Outlaws-esque way, but it is far more open, where Slay the Spire and Pirate Outlaws have maps that lead you up vertically, and you have set paths that you can go. There's no punishment for traveling around the map. It's just that every so many moves, either the boss gets a little closer to you. But you can travel around pretty freely. But now, like, if you're trying to get to something at the top of the map, you can't just click at the top of the map. You've got to go to whatever's in between. So if, be it an event, be it a chest. One thing that is nice is if there's a chest and you don't have any keys, so you go past it and go to the next event, and you have a battle and you get a key from that, you can back up and go back to the chest. That's something that Pirate Outlaws and Slay the Spire and other games like that, they don't let you traverse backward. Whereas Deck of Ashes is like, yeah, fuck, go back. I don't care. You want to go back and get the chest? Go back and get the chest. got some keys now? Cool. Give us the keys. You're probably still going to get fucked because this game is hard, but you can open the chest now. One thing I do like is that you have a little more freedom over which of the enemies you're going to attack. What I don't like is how for boss battles specifically, they break down into rounds, and I can't grasp how the round is determined, but like at one point I had one of the bosses down literally to like 5 hit points left. He just disappears and leaves, and a whole slew of minions comes in, and I have to fight all these minions.
Oh god.
And the minions kill me. And I'm like, what the fuck? So I do the boss battle again, because at least, thankfully, I'm playing as a character that respawns without any issues, right? Gotta make it at least a little easier on myself, since it's hard as fuck every other way. I play this boss again, and I'm like, okay, at least I know this is gonna happen. This time, the minion wave pops up while the boss still has, like, 40% of their health. But I'm lucking out because the character I spawned with or was playing with, she respawns back at camp with all of her health. So I go into it this time full health and I'm able to like chip away a little more. I actually get through the minion wave and the boss comes back and he still has all the same amount of health and I'm able to kill him. And I'm like, well, what the fuck was the point of that? What justified it? I was so confused. And I just don't understand why it wasn't kill the boss, get him out of the way, go move on to the next one. Why is there this weird minion round in the middle that comes out of nowhere?
To change things up.
To make me fail. Yeah, that's all it that was. Too. It just wanted it to be harder for me and to make me fail. And
I mean, you have mentioned it's a hard game. So
it is. And it's just, I don't know. I feel like I'm never going to wrap my head around it. And it's definitely one of those games that's meant for somebody who just has time to sit down and focus on learning this game.
No.
And I'm not sure I'm that because I'm still learning the fuck out of Pirate Outlaws.
Oh, well, that's your problem. You got to stop playing Pirate Outlaws and play some other games.
That's rude. But I just, the difficulty curve is so high that like I said, you could put 200 hours in it and still just be sitting there like, the fuck am I doing? Yeah.
Well, is those 200 hours worth $20? What's your verdict on this
one? Yeah, I think that it's still a good game. And I think that it's really well done. And I think that if you have that kind of time commitment and, you know, you're not put off by the difficulty in the learning curve, that you're definitely going to get your money's worth out of it. I think even for the time I've put into it, I've got my money's worth out of it, and I feel like a fucking idiot for playing it and not knowing what I'm doing. Like, proud I can see myself just getting in a mean streak and going, I will not let this game get the best of me, and sitting down until I have my head on it. But, you know, coming into it new, and how a new player is going to look, like, it's definitely a put off for new players. It's not something that if you don't have any basis of how a card battling roguelike plays, where you're going to be like, you know, this is the game for me and I'm going to love it. Like, no, you're going to be lost. And it's not going to hold your hand enough to help you to get on with it.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Horde of Plenty, developed and published by Smaunch, released June 11th on Xbox One and Steam for $14.99. In this action-packed, forward-scrolling twin-stick shooter, construction worker Ron Mayhem's beloved pet Puffy, a rather round and yellow pufferfish, has been captured by the forces of evil. Slay the hordes, collect mad loot, and bring Puffy back. Cole, what is Horde of Plenty?
So this is basically just a top-down twin-stick shooter. It does scroll vertically, and that's about the long and short of it. There are
all right. So $15.
There are some puzzle elements involved with it. You're trying to push me along,
which we want to be done. We're like well over 2 hours now. We got to chop this shit up. You've been doing some long reviews tonight, damn it.
I'm long-winded, and here I was like afraid I was going to fuck up everything and not have enough to talk about.
Nope, you're talking too much, damn it.
I'm sorry. But Horde of Plenty is I feel bad. I feel like I'm going to be bitching on it. Let me just preface saying it's not bad for what it is, okay? Even though I'm about to just kind of tear it apart a little bit. It's not bad for what it is. It's just that it is what it is. There is nothing more about it. I kind of have the same problem with it that I had with Disintegration. It was like, I thought I was going to be getting more out of it than what I got. As far as being a vertically scrolling twin stick, fuck it. Yeah, it's fine. But it just didn't... I don't know. Everything seemed very generic and mediocre, and nothing about it stood out to me to say, hey, yeah, you want to keep playing this. It was like, I got through it and I accepted it and carried on. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I feel kind of bad. Like, it sounds mean, but when you play as much shit as we play on a weekly basis, I need a hook. And there wasn't a hook. There wasn't anything that made me go, get me back into it. Like, after I did and played it, and I was like, okay, I played it for a review, I'm good, let's go next. And I never felt like I wanted to just load it back up and play it for shits and giggles. And that's kind of a bad sign. Or at least it sounds bad when I say it for the sake of the review.
I mean, it's not a bad game, because I've played it as well. It's fun. It's entertaining. It's just somewhat shallow. There's not a lot of depth to it.
Like, I thought it got interesting. There's one level where, like, you can move the these almost like revolving door vertical platforms and kind of shift the way the level looks and which way the enemies come at you. But it's all the same enemies. They're all very generic. They all just kind of shoot at you generically. They swarm you generically. You shoot them generically. And that's it. Then you go through the portal and it's done. And you're like, okay, well, I did that. Bye. And there was just nothing that made me go, oh, yeah, let's play this again. It was just, I did it.
Well, any that's gripes?
That's just it. It was very, it played fine. It's not, I'm not mad at it.
It's a very matter of fact game. It is what it is. It's nothing more. It's nothing less. It does what it sets out to do. It does it fairly well. I had a fun time with it. You're right. There's just not a lot to it.
Shine. It's just, it plays. You can say I played it and then that's the end of it. But there's nothing, there's no hook.
I wish it was $10. 15 seems a little steep. If this was $10, it would be an easy recommendation. At 15, I'm more on like the try it range of things. Yeah. It's just very down the middle. Like,
I feel like I've used this word so much and it's so mean, but it's just kind of mediocre. You're like, okay, I did it. Next.
Yeah. I mean, not much else to say, but it's fun. It's just, it won't change your world.
Yeah.
All right, next game is called Radio Squid, developed by Pixel Teriyaki, published by Rattlake Games, released June 16th on PS4, 17th on Xbox One, 19th on the Switch for $4.99. A young squid has been cursed. Now it's up to you to lift the curse by reaching the depths of the sea with plenty of coins at the end. Explore deep sea floors while taking care of your enemies, utilizing the power of the siren song. Cole, what is Radio Squid?
Rattlake and I need to have a chat because we have a contract. Okay, they give me easy one case, and I tell people to buy them. The last two Radalekas I have played have not been fucking easy. Radio Squid isn't easy. I'm frustrated about it. and I feel worse because other people are like, oh yeah, it's fine, it's easy. And I'm like, no, this is not easy. That fucking block and the first boss is just fucking hard. So let's talk about how you actually play. Oh God, I'm going to give a long review to a Radalekas game. Here we are. Let me take a sip. Okay, I took a sip. Let's go. you're Squid. The whole premise is it's a Radalekas. I press A a lot. But basically, like, there's a song of Siren, and somehow you break it or it gets out or you fucked it up and you got to buy it back. And it's not cheap. So you got to kill the shit in your way till you get to the bottom of the ocean so that you can buy it back. If you die, you have to use your coins to buy your life back. If you fuck up tragically and you have no coins, can't buy yourself back, then it's a roguelike and you start that shit all over from the beginning. You have, in a way, you can play it like a twin stick. You can use your thumbsticks as directions to shoot. But you can also use your face buttons, A to shoot down, or, X to shoot down. A. Ah, fuck, what are the buttons? I've played so much.
A down, B right, X left, Y up.
God damn it.
Yeah, it's only a four-direction shooter. So you could use the analog stick, but it's only four-direction.
Yes. Very Binding of Isaac. So there's it's all black and white, some super adorable artwork involved here. Even though it's monochrome, it does have the black and white, but it also has red spot in it. Super, super cute. Very into it. Your bullets can wrap. You can wrap. There are openings in the map. If you go up, you come back from the bottom. Go left, come back from the right, vice versa. Works as well. Don't get stuck on that mechanic, because that motherfucking boss at the end of the first wave will already tell you that everything you know about the game just shits the bed. if you shoot, bullets ricochet back, you get hit, bah, you're dead. Whether it's yours, whether it's an enemy, shit hits you, you have a health bar, takes off your health bar. Sometimes you get lucky, potions drop, you can get some health back, doesn't fucking matter, you're gonna die, then you gotta buy yourself back. Then you don't got no money when you get to the bottom of the ocean. Clearly I'm struggling with that part.
I'm struggling with this game because of the one, I guess, hook to the game is that your own bullets can hurt you.
Yeah. And they will. And
repeated. I've died more to myself than I have to actual enemies.
It's the only way I've died.
Yeah.
Now there is one twist is that, much like in Binding of Isaac and Enter the Gungeon and all that, you have the bomb, which can clear. Not only does it clear the room of bullets, but it turns all the bullets in the game to coins. And so you can then collect those, which is nice because otherwise you're going to die and you're not going to have any money. So I wish that it was a little more clear on how you get the bullets back. I thought initially that the bombs came back when you switched to a new room. That doesn't seem to be true. So I don't know what was actually resulting in it. I don't know if I was picking them up and didn't know it or what was actually going on. I was just trying not to die. And I was like, oh, look, I have a bomb. Problem solved. Oh, wait, now I don't. Get fucked. A lot more difficult than I was expecting. I'm curious to know. Carnage said that dev tweet, though. I want to know what they tweeted. I hope they were making fun of people like me.
They were making fun of Carnage.
Were they?
Yeah.
Good. Definitely deserves to be made fun of.
I know Carnage was streaming it, and the dev showed up. Or I think this is the one where the dev showed up and was watching him, and he kept dying to his own bullets, and the dev was laughing at him.
Good. Also, though, they would do the same to me.
Yeah.
So, not going to stream this one. it's tough. I'm surprised at how difficult it is. I'm surprised at how difficult the last couple of Radalekas games have been. I don't like it. I need a 15-minute completion to make me feel better about myself. Yeah,
we just need a 15-minute, who does all the platformers that Radleika puts out?
I'm not sure.
I forget the dev.
Carnage
says watching the Carnage Radio Squid stream, first comment I see, wait, you get hit by your own bullets?
Yeah, you do. And it's tough. But I had a good time with it. I just was just surprised by how difficult it was. I was like, you know, here's the thing. Joe gives me Radleika games on Wednesday and is like, so you'll have it tomorrow. And I'm like, yeah, obviously.
Yeah, it's Radleika.
And I wasn't ready for this. I beat one boss. And I was like, fuck, finally. I don't know. 3 hours later, Carnage says still a sub 1 hour completion. Get fucked. Get out of my stream. I don't ever want to see you again. Because I'm not getting this shit. No one a sub 1 hour. Fuck out of here. It's that fucking boss bullshitting me with the you go up but come out from the right. That's not okay. No, I think it's a little on the tougher side, and that's something you need to be prepared for, because if you pick it up just on the grounds that you see, oh, Radleika publishes, this shit's going to be easy. Surprise, bitch. <Yeah. laughs> Not this week. Wait for the visual novel. But if you're looking for a genuinely challenging, cutesy little game that's going to make you rage for your 1K, then yeah, $5. Pick it up. Fuck it. Why not?
Cool. Yeah. All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Mosaic Neku Waifus 2. Yes, okay. Mosaic Neku Waifus 2, developed and published by Lil Hentai Games, released June 5th on Steam for $1.99. Hentai puzzle micro visual novel with a sprinkle of RPG. Flirt with all the Neko girls. If we're talking hentai, that must mean Dark Mika's here. Dark Mika, how are you doing?
Pretty good. I think this is Aki's adult time, is what we should just call these segments. Yes,
I'm going to go grab a drink.
All right. Well, Aki, tell us about Mosaic Neku Waifus 2.
Okay. In this game, basically all you do is you tap tiles to make them move either clockwise or counterclockwise to solve a visual puzzle. Like, a picture of a girl, for instance, which is what all these are obviously based on. All these pictures move during it because they're all the various girls modeling in various outfits or lack thereof. And as long as you got the 18 plus patch anyways, which is free, so enjoy. I don't know how it is without the patch, because
I mean, why would you play it without the patch?
Exactly. Like, fuck that. There's no point to it without that.
You need dem titties.
And pussy. And anus. That has, it really? Does all of it. Yeah. Nice. It does all of it. Yes. And it's
how many
not
buttholes does your game have?
This one showed 4, because there's 4 different girls in this one.
Nice. All right. So, how is the game?
It was surprisingly good, and one of the main reasons why it was good, because I've played some of these before, and lots of them are kind of eh. Most of them are just a static picture, and you just have to flip things around, and then boof, it's done. It's just a fucking standard puzzle. This one, the characters moved throughout all the pictures. Maybe not a lot, but they moved, which helped you figure out where tiles needed to be, instead of them just being like, oh, this is some shade of orange. I have to figure out which one of the directions this orange goes. That's stupid. So instead, the characters are moving through it, which is nice. The art style is very pretty. They're semi-3D even. They're just this very gorgeous looking art style, which I didn't expect, because again, usually they're just static, stereotypical fucking pictures that are kind of eh, whatever, you know? So that was cool. And unlike lots of them, this even had points where you had to solve this part of this picture before it would open up these other parts, which were usually the parts covering the good bits, whereas some people say the naughty bits, but they're the good bits is what they are. And then you'd have to solve those puzzles, which are usually smaller and have more pieces to them. Whereas, like, let's say the face might have, on the early ones, it might have, like, 4 to 6 pieces. The genitalia, when you get to those, have 9 to 12 or more pieces for just their vagina alone. So
you got to earn that vagina.
Damn straight you do, and they're glorious. The RPG elements are kind of eh. You get some level ups. Well, you get a lot of level ups. I think I was like level 200 and something from just playing through each level enough times to get every item, which I'll talk about here in a minute. But the level ups, they allow that you have 2 different skill trees that you can level up as, and you can put as many points into each item as you fucking want. There's a limit to where no more points being added to it is of any use, and you're just wasting points. I kind of would like if they were like, okay, you've reached the max for this. You can't put fucking points in anymore, so that you're not wasting fucking points, because at some point it will become impossible to level up. You'd have to play it a fuck ton, but there is a limit to where you can't level up anymore, because every time you beat a puzzle you get X amount of experience, and every time you beat it after that you get less and less and less. So granted, again, I was at like 200 and something, and I had played through most levels 2 or 3 times, and I was still getting, you know, from the harder ones, thousands of experience. So it's not like you're going to run out anytime soon, and there's really no point to maxing the level if they're, I don't even know what the max level would be. It's stupid. But as I mentioned, I replayed many of the levels. The visual novel aspect is after you finish the level, you have a little conversation with the girl that you just unlocked pictures of, or they're having conversations with each other during the lesbian scenes, which is, yes. not going to argue with that at all. A fox girl and a cat girl eating each other out. Fuck yeah, I'm for it. Yeah, okay.
That's why this is the adult time.
Exactly. This is why it's Aki's adult time. And the visual novel aspect, they're not very long, but each choice you make gives you a different item, which also levels up your different abilities, but they're not through actual leveling. So they're static. It's like, oh, this gives you a +1 to this, this, and this. And it's and that's just what it is. And every last mission that or level you play, you have at least 2 items that you can obtain. One for doing the conversation one way and one for doing it the other way. Sometimes you get a few more because there's other conversations chunks to it. But I think the most I got was 3 from any conversation, and that happened a few times. Mm-hmm. Most of them, it's just 2. So you're expected to play through it a couple times. I just did each level over and over until I had all the items, and then I moved to the next one. Because I was like, well, I've gone through all the conversation bits. I've got all the items. Time for more nakedness. So.
Oh, yeah. Lord.
Yeah.
Well. And
the visual novel part, all these girls are very much into you, even though they don't fucking know you. Like, they almost all of them were like, yeah, we just met, but I'm really horny. I want to fuck you. I'm like, okay.
Sounds like it fits for a game from a company called Lil Hentai Games. So $2 on this one. What are your thoughts?
if you like naked ladies and you're into Nekomori, which are the actual term for the cat girls in this, then fucking I say go all for it. It's a pretty simple, quick completion. It took me, I think, 3 hours to get absolutely everything in the game, and I didn't even actually have to, because you don't have to obtain all the items in order to 100% it. I was just like, yes, I'll do that, just because. So yeah, it's 3 hours, a couple dollars. Oh, you know, hell yeah, I think it's totally worth it. This was a surprisingly good game. When you suggested it to me, I was like, sure, fuck it, I'll play it, whatever, because I was expecting it to be kind of crap, honestly. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll play it, because I figured you had suggested it to me on a lark, and I was like, fuck it, why not? I'll do it anyways. Fuck it. It looks like shit, but I'll play it.
And hey, we got an email about it, and I thought, why not? You like reviewing games like this, so I hit you up, and you're going to be reviewing their whole catalog in the coming weeks.
Yeah, and yeah, we're going to say, I didn't think I'd like it. I actually really liked this one. It was really fun, which was very unexpected, to be honest.
Did you really think you weren't going to like it?
Yes, because really? I don't like most of these types of games, because they're usually static pictures.
Right? No,
they're usually static pictures, and they're boring as shit, because usually all it is just solving that static picture, and I'm just like, eh. But this one with the movements and the fucking visual novel part, that made it really interesting. I really liked it, surprisingly.
Nice. Well, we are going to look at their other games in the coming weeks, dating back to 2018, so we'll see their origins and how they've progressed over the years. But for now, that is it for this episode. Thanks, Aki, for being here and doing your thing. Thanks to Chris for coming on and hanging out with us earlier. Always good having him on. Music, I'm going to play something by Blind. I'm in the mood for some dancing, so we're going to play some electronica. And anyone have any final words to end the show?
Aki's adult adventure needs to become a video game. That's surely pornographic hentai game. I would love that. It would be fantastic. Just let me fuck slime girls.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, my God.